Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, and this podcast, Authors on Fire. I am Pat Rulo. Today I am with a multi-returning Firebird Book Award winning author who I just absolutely love, Dr. Patricia Levy. And this winning book is titled After the Red Carpet. She has won previous Firebird Book Awards for her books Hollyland, Film Blue, Reinvention, Low Fat Love, Celestial Bodies, and Location Shoot. Formerly an associate professor of sociology and founding director of gender studies at Stonehill College, Patricia has published more than 40 books and has received career awards from the National Art Education Association, the American Creativity Association, the American Educational Research Association, and more. And in 2018, she was honored by the National Women's Hall of Fame in SUNY New Paltz when they established the Patricia Levy Award for Art and Social Justice. And here's a recent one. Just in 2024, the London Arts-Based Research Center established the Patricia Levy Award for Arts-Based Research. So much to talk about, and I just love our time spent together. Welcome back to you, Patricia.
Thank you so much for having me and for that generous and embarrassing introduction. It's always a joy to talk with you, Pat.
Embarrassing. I am just, oh my gosh, in awe of, and this was a teeny tiny little paragraph of all that you've accomplished. And so there's more at your website. There will be more on our website as well.
Just remember, it's a highlight reel. Whenever you hear somebody's bio, people can sound really amazing in a paragraph when you take everything you've done your whole life. So I always try to remember it's a highlight reel.
It's a highlight reel. Yes, it is. But you've had some really nice highlights. I want to talk quickly, especially about this new, the London Arts-Based Research Center established this award for you. Tell us about that.
Oh, my goodness, Pat. I have to tell you, I mean, professionally, this will probably be the nicest thing that ever happens to me. And I just couldn't believe it. So the London Arts-Based Research Center has reached out to me before to do some online events, which I have done with them, via Zoom or Eventbrite or that kind of thing. And then they invited me to come and give a keynote address at their conference this past October, which I was very happy to do. And also, you know, get a trip to London. My husband came with me. It was wonderful. And the day of my keynote address, at the end of the day, I was surprised to learn that they had established an annual award in my name. I had absolutely no idea this was coming, Pat. So it was, I just couldn't believe it. And the woman who runs the Arts-Based Research Center, Rula, who is the loveliest person you could ever meet, and she does so much to champion the arts in the world, she had reached out to my longtime assistant of 13 years, who reached out to some of my closest friends and colleagues, and they sent video messages in to congratulate me and about me and about my work. So all of these people kept this secret from me. These are people I talk to all the time. I mean, I talk to my assistant every day. And this whole group of my nearest and dearest had kept the secret. So as I'm watching this, you know, little film with these video pops from my closest friends, I just sat there crying. I just had no idea it was coming, so I couldn't believe it. So I was extremely honored. I didn't even make a speech or anything. I just said thank you through my tears because I was just so surprised it had happened. But it really means a lot to me because, first of all, I've loved the arts my entire life, and I've devoted my life to doing arts research and to being an artist and to championing other artists. And so to it all be recognized among those people is just an incredible honor. And I'm also really aware how few women have awards established in their name. And that's certainly not something I grew up with. You know, all the big academic awards and literary awards, they were all named after men, or most of them were. And so it's not lost on me for other girls or women to see an award named after a woman is meaningful and is inspiring. So it was just an incredible, incredible thing. And I cried like a baby in front of everyone and ruined my eye makeup. And it's an amazing thing.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. How could you help but not cry, especially when you see all of your friends showing up on the screen there? That would be a real tearjerker.
Oh, Pat, I couldn't believe it. One of my friends had texted me that morning, like, oh, have a great time in London. And like, he's never said a word. Like, you know, she knew what was going to happen that day. And as soon as I saw her face on the screen, there were the waterworks.
Did your husband know?
He did not know. I think he, like, thought something was up towards the end of the day because they were making sure that I wasn't going to leave, and they were making sure I was sitting in a certain place. And I can be a little bit dense about those things, but I think he started to figure out something nice was about to happen. And I don't think he knew what it was, but I think he knew something nice was about to happen. I know he did, because he took out his phone and got pictures of it, which he gave me later. So he must have started figuring out something lovely was going to happen.
Oh, I'm so happy something lovely happened to you, because you were just a lovely person and just so well deserved. So congratulations again.
You are so kind. Thank you. I have to say, the best part of the whole thing really was that in every single video, every single one of my friends, the people who know me best, all said that I'm a kind and generous person, which is something you would really never say about yourself. Mm-hmm. But I think it's the nicest thing you can say about somebody else.
Yes.
And so really, more than the sort of professional aspect, that's what meant the most to me, that people I love and respect would say such nice things about me. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that you've really made an impact on them in that way, so much so that they would actually vocalize it and put words to it in that manner.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Oh, well, good. This is exciting. That makes me happy. When I read about it, I thought, wow, I can't wait to talk with you and find out more about this.
Thank you.
Yes. And well, congratulations also on winning the Firebird. You win awards for all of your books. So I'm always happy when you share your books with us.
Thank you. I mean, each one is truly a labor of love. I pour my heart and soul into my books. I love writing more than anything, but it doesn't mean it comes easily. I write 7 days a week, year round. I write on weekends. I write on holidays. I write on vacations. So I really pour everything into my books. And so for anyone to even acknowledge one of my books or appreciate it means so much to me.
Oh, wow. That's very kind of humble of you to say that, because I see that you travel all over the place, and I'm always wondering, how does she manage to write when she's in all of these great places, museums and fabulous restaurants? Like, where do you squeeze the time in to write?
Well, first of all, anytime I'm on an airplane, I am writing.
Mm-hmm.
So unless it's an overnight flight, that's my exception. But other than that, when I'm in an airport, I'm sitting in the lounge writing. When I'm on the airplane, I'm sitting there writing. And I get up usually early every morning in hotels, and I'm not a morning person, actually. In my daily life, I do not get up early. But in my travel life, I get up early because it's the only way to get writing time and do all the fun tourism things that we want to do. So I get up early every day, and I write in the hotel. And I'm a huge fan of writing out in the world. So sitting in a cafe in an art museum, that's one of my favorites. So very often, my husband and I will go to an art museum and we'll sort of tour the museum for an hour or so, but then we'll sit in a cafe for many hours and he'll read a book and I'll work on a book that I'm writing. Mm-hmm. So I never leave the house without, you know, pages from a book I'm working on stuck into my bag. All my pocketbooks are large, so they can accommodate folders with my manuscripts. And I lug them around museums and all the different places we tour, so that when I have that chance to plop down in the cafe, I have my book with me.
Right. Well, that's clearly dedication and a love for what you do.
I love it.
Yes.
I mean, I feel so lucky to do what I love. There, you know, most people do not get to spend every day doing what they love, and that is not lost on me.
Yes.
And I mean, most people in my family and my ancestors did not get to do the thing they loved every day, all day. So I truly, truly appreciate it. And I also feel inspired when I'm in different places. So when I travel, one of the best things to me is to sit in like a cafe corner or to sit in an art museum, sit somewhere. And, you know, all the people and sounds and languages spoken around you, the art hanging on the walls, whatever it might be, it's all really inspiring to me. And so I feel like that adds another layer to my writing. And so I always want to sort of take advantage of that in the moment.
Oh, for sure. Just to soak in the ambiance, because it's always changing. You know, your next cafe or your next stop is completely different.
Absolutely. And Pat, you're going to love this story. And this is true. This is just one of these amazing, like, synchronicity kinds of things. But the first trip that my husband and I took after the pandemic, and we were very cautious. We did not do anything until we got the vaccine because we were just terrified of COVID at that time. So we didn't take a trip for a long time. The first trip we took after our self-imposed lockdown was to London. And while we were in London, I was writing part of After the Red Carpet, and there's actually a chapter that takes place in London, and I wrote that whole chapter while I was in London, as well as working on other parts of the book. Well, fast forward, when I was just in London at the London Artspace Research Center, where they named this lovely award in my honor, it was right when After the Red Carpet came out. So last time I was in London, I was writing it, and this time when I was in London, the book had just come out. So very, very full circle. I felt like I was there sort of celebrating it.
Mm-hmm. Wow, isn't that something? I love that story.
It's amazing how life works. It really is. And I mean, we had a bookstore event for the novel, and it was just, I mean, you can't plan that. That the previous time I had been there, that I'm always working on some book when I'm traveling, but this was the book I was working on. And of course, I have many books that have scenes set in different places, and I don't necessarily get to go to those places. I mean, sometimes I just have to rely on memory or Google and that sort of thing. But in this case, I actually went there and wrote the London chapter in London. And so to return, literally, it was like within weeks of the book being released. It was really an amazing full circle moment.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. That's a really rich story. Thank you.
I love your enthusiasm for all the behind the scenes.
Oh, that's what it's all about. It gives a whole flavor of who you are and how you function and how these books come about. I think everybody's interested to hear about that. In fact, I have another quick question before we get into your book. I read somewhere about your other synchronicity moment when you were traveling in your Soho miracle.
Oh, my goodness, Pat. This is like one of the coolest things that ever happened to me in my entire life. I mean, when I think about it, I still get chills. So I'll fill everyone in. When I was growing up, I was from Boston. I lived in the outside of Boston. I lived in a suburb. But my mother was an artist. She was a painter, and she was from New York, and I had family in New York. And we would regularly go to New York and go visit the art galleries in Soho. And I was born in 75, so I'm talking about back in the 80s. And this was the heyday of pop art in Soho, New York. I mean, this was the time of Andy Warhol and Keith Haring, who I met, who signed a poster for me, and Julian Schnabel and Jean-Michel Basquiat, and their Mary Boone Gallery was like the biggest gallery in the world, and we used to go there for art openings. And it was my favorite part of my childhood. I had a lot of not great things in my childhood, but these trips were my absolute favorite thing in the world. When we would go to New York and we would go and spend the days in Soho going to art galleries and shops and restaurants, and it was very different back in the 80s than it is now. I mean, now it's a lot of name brand stores and things like that, but back then it was boutiques and restaurants and cafes that, you know, you had never heard of, that didn't exist anywhere else. And my favorite place in Soho was called the Soho Emporium, and it opened in the early to mid-80s and closed in the mid-90s, I think in 96. And basically, it's this huge, huge building, one of these gorgeous old, the kinds of buildings they have in Soho with, you know, the fire escapes and all that sort of stuff. It was this huge building, and it housed lots of different vendors. So some people had, you know, clothing. Some people had home furnishings. Some people had jewelry, different things. It was like a mini mall, but it had no relationship to like a mall where they have commercial things. And there was this one, you know, store, booth, whatever you want to call it, in the Emporium that was run by this woman named Janice. And to me, Janice was the coolest human being on the planet. I had never known such a cool human being in real life. She was beautiful. I'm guessing she was probably in her 30s at the time. She was gorgeous. She had long, straight brown hair. She always dressed in these very chic, like monochromatic outfits, looked very New York, and she had lots and lots of vintage jewelry all over her. And in her booth, she sold gorgeous jewelry from the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, mostly, and some antique pocketbooks as well, mostly jewelry at that time. And it was just incredible. My mother and I would always go there. It was all costume jewelry, and my mother would always buy jewelry. And we would stay there for hours sometimes talking to Janice. If she would see me looking at anything, she would, like, slip it around my neck or, you know, put it on me. I was a very shy kid. I would never have asked to try anything on. But she always put everything on me, and my mother, for a decade, bought many, many, many treasures there, a lot of which ended up to be gifted to me or that I borrowed over the years for special occasions. And anyway, the Emporium closed in the mid-90s, and we had no idea what happened to Janice. Like, you know, she was gone. And, you know, this was a time, this was like before the world of Google and everybody having a cell phone or a smartphone and, like, you know, being able to figure stuff out. So to us, she was just gone. And there has not been a single time, Pat, in all these years that I have gone to New York and not thought about her. I go to New York regularly a few times a year. One of my publishers is in New York. I always think about her. Every single time I walk down the street where the Emporium used to be, I point it out to my husband, who is absolutely sick of hearing it because he hears it every single time. And I describe it and I tell him about Janice. And this is, you know, years and years and years. And the last time my husband and I were in New York in November, we went for a long weekend and we were staying in Soho in the hotel we always stay at and that we've been staying at for many, many years. And we went to see a little show at a small theater that seats like maybe 300 people in the Village. And it was a Monday night, and the whole thing is a series of flukes. I don't think we've ever gone to theater on a Monday night before. I mean, Broadway's not even open on Mondays. We didn't get these tickets in advance. Like, a few days before the trip, I saw this little theater was having the show, and I thought, gee, that's something to do. Very, very random we ended up there. So we're walking back after the show at around 10 o'clock at night on a Monday, and my husband and I don't like to stop for the streetlights, so we always sort of walk in the direction of the streetlight that's allowing us to go. So whatever crosswalk says you can go, we go, and we like crisscross our way until eventually we get to our hotel. As a result of this, the streetlights put us down a street in Soho that's one block further from where we usually walk. So probably the only street in Soho I have not gone down in the last 30 years is the one we end up walking down. And as we're walking down, I see a store window, and it has the most exquisite vintage jewelry and antique Lucite pocketbooks, like from the 50s and 60s. And I stop cold. Now, mind you, I'm not thinking about Janice or anything. I'm just looking at the gorgeous, gorgeous things in this window. And I said to my husband, I said, oh, my God, it's closed. We have to come back. And he was like, don't worry. I know where it is. We'll come back. And I'm like, And he's like, come on, let's go. And I did not want to leave, Pat. I kept standing at that window, which I never do. I mean, I usually don't even stop. And mind you, there are many other stores in that neighborhood that all have pretty things. I didn't stop at any of them. And I'm stopped at this window staring, and my husband is like, are we going? And I'm like, this is where I belong. Those are literally the words I said to him, which is a crazy thing to say about, like, a jewelry store, but it's what came out of my mouth. I had this very strong feeling I was being called to this store. So we go back to the hotel. We put on Friends, which is what we always watch at night before we go to bed when we're in New York. And while we're watching, I decide I cannot wait to go back to the store. I have to Google it. So I Google the store, and I can't find a website. I don't have a website, but I see some reviews. And in one of the reviews, somebody talked about the very lovely older woman who owns the store named Janice. Well, Pat, my heart was beating so fast. I can't even tell you. I knew it has to be her. It has to be. And so I kept searching and searching. And then I found a newspaper article. Evidently, there's some local paper, and once a month, they highlight a different business in the area. And at one point after the pandemic, they had highlighted her business. The store is called Deco Jewels. So I click on the story, and sure enough, there is a picture of her, and it is Janice. And there's a biography about her, and it talks about how she began at the Soho Emporium. And I burst into tears. Like, I literally burst into tears. My husband had no idea what was happening, and I told him. And the next day, we were leaving. We were supposed to go home, and we were supposed to go out to lunch and then, you know, check out of our hotel. So we were able to change our lunch to brunch to make it earlier. And we went to the store, and I was just hoping she'd be there because one of the articles said that she's 2 days a week, she has somebody else that works at the store. So I didn't know if she'd be there, but we go to the store. It's empty, except Janice is standing behind the counter. Oh. I, of course, know it's her, but I don't want to sound like a crazy person because she has not seen me in 30 years. So I go up to her and I say, "Are you Janice?" And she said, "Yes." And then I told her who I was. Oh. And by the end of our conversation, we were both holding back tears. Mm. She just couldn't believe it. I thanked her for how kind she was when I was a child. I told her about characters that she has influenced and inspired in novels I've written. I just went on and on. I bought two beautiful necklaces that are treasures that even when I'm at home wearing sweatpants, sometimes I wear them because they make me feel happy because they're Janice necklaces. You know, my mother always had what I call Janice necklaces, but I couldn't. But now I'm a grown-up and I can have my own. So it's just amazing. And I asked her how long she had been there. And she said when the Emporium closed, she went somewhere else for about 2 months, didn't like it, and then she opened this store. So, Pat, she has been there for 30 years. And I have been walking one block away talking about this woman for 30 years.
Oh, what a story.
I mean, like, can you believe it? It's just an amazing, amazing thing. It just shows you there is magic in the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that you incorporated, I think you even have a character named Janice in one of your
books. I do have a character named Janice in my first novel, Low Fat Love, my debut novel.
Yes.
And the character isn't based on her at all because they're nothing alike, but the name came from her. The novel takes place in New York. And to me, I associated women in New York with the name Janice because of her. And so she is named Janice. And then later in a different novel I wrote called Blue, the whole novel takes place in Soho. And I have nods to many, many different things back from when I went there as a child. So it's just, you know, it's just an incredible thing. It's like it's an incredible thing. And so, of course, now I'm planning to go and visit her every time I go to New York. And this June is my 50th birthday. And for my 50th birthday, my husband asked, you know, what do you want to do? Do you want a vacation, a party, which I'm the last person to want a party. Mm. So I said, no, what I want is to go to my favorite place with my favorite people. So my husband and my daughter and her boyfriend and I are going to New York for a long weekend and we're staying in Soho, which means now I will get to introduce my daughter to Janice as well.
Oh, I just got chills. I love that. Oh, my gosh.
You know, most of my books, part of them have been written in Soho. I go there many times a year. It's my favorite place. I'm actually getting ready to go there this Friday for 9 nights for the holidays. And I will be working on another novel while I'm there. So it's very much incorporated into the things I write. But just also the idea of the special people who really matter in your life, whether they know it or not. That is definitely a theme in all of my books, including in After the Red Carpet. You know, I mean, After the Red Carpet is a sequel to my novel, The Location Shoot, right, which I wrote during the lockdown. And in a nutshell, The Location Shoot, it was a group that was making a film in Sweden and living together for 3 months while they were making a film. And the film is about the meaning of life. And the film director invites his dear friend, Ella, who is an American philosopher, to spend the summer with them in Sweden. So basically she goes to, you know, freeload and hang out with these artists. And she falls in love with Finn, the star of the film. And the whole group forms this really beautiful bond of friendship. And I don't want to give too much away, but there is one person who passes away in the book. But he makes an impression on everyone, and that continues through the other books. So in After the Red Carpet, the entire scene in London is because this person who passed away, he's getting an award in in his honor, and his wife is accepting that award, and so all the people from the film go to be there. But it's very much a thing like Janice is in my life. There are these people who come into your life. They're not your best friends or the person you marry or, you know, those kinds of people, but they're really important to you for some reason, even if they don't know it. Mm-hmm. Like, this woman was always important to me. I always associate her with happy times from my childhood. I associate her with things I love about New York, about art, about women being independent, many different things. And I promise you, she had absolutely no idea about any of that. I mean, she does now because I couldn't shut up when I saw her. But she didn't know about any of that. And I think it's very much like in the book, in After the Red Carpet, that this person who passed away, I'm sure, would not have known the huge impact he had on all these other people.
Mm-hmm. As with all of your books, there's so much more to them, where you explore the identities of Elle and Finn and as individuals, but then what it's like when two people come together.
The book really looks at, I mean, yes, of course, there's fun aspects because it's a romance, but I look at my books more as like they really explore love itself. Mm-hmm. And so there is always this other layer. And so like in this book, I really wanted to look at, you know, how do we retain our identities when we're in a relationship? How does me become a part of a we and still maintain me? And what does real partnership look like and feel like? And how does romance thrive after marriage? I mean, so many romance novels and movies we see and all kinds of pop culture, they end with the engagement or the wedding. But really, that's like the beginning of a love story. And to me, a love story is not just about the two people being together. It's also who they are on their own and how does their relationship make them more or less of who they're meant to be. And so those are all the different kinds of things I wanted to explore in the book. And I will tell you a little secret, Pat. It's not such a good secret because I do sort of blab it. But After the Red Carpet is actually the second book in what is a trilogy. So for people who fall in love with Elle and Finn, there are three books in total. The final book is coming out next September, and it's called Cinematic Destinies. And it takes place 30 years after the location shoot. So you have the location shoot where Elle and Finn fall in love and create this friendship group. Then you have After the Red Carpet, which follows them for 5 years as they build a life and family together, and we see what that looks like and feels like, and if two fairy tales come true, and what do they look like in practice. And then we have Cinematic Destinies, which is 30 years later, and it follows Ella and Finn, but also other characters. And I don't want to give too much away about that, but it follows multiple love stories, as well as the final film that Jean Mercier is shooting at the end of his career. So my hope is that if people enjoy the books, they read the whole trilogy, because there is this really sort of big overall narrative about love and romance and art.
Yes, you always tie art within all of your stories because that's who you are.
I can't help myself. You know, I started out as an arts researcher. I have my doctorate in sociology, and I've written a lot of nonfiction books about the arts. And I'm very immersed in that world, and I'm passionate about advocating for the arts. And so I do try to weave an arts narrative into each of my novels. And so I feel like it distinguishes my books. I feel like every author needs to have their own fingerprint and do their own thing. I mean, we're all writing in genres that already exist, that have all kinds of expectations. And, you know, we're all doing new versions of things that are out there in some ways, but we also have to do something unique and original. And so for me, there's always an arts narrative. And it's always different, but usually has something to do with the magic that the arts bring into our lives.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I love the title, Patricia, Cinematic Destinies. Very compelling.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm excited about it. I just got the cover recently. I'm excited about the cover, and I can't wait to share that. So I actually have a different book coming out this March. So that book is, which I'm also really excited about, Pat, it's called Shooting Stars Above. And it is the first book in a big romance series. There are 6 books I already wrote for the series. Mm-hmm. And so this is the launch title, and we'll be releasing one of those each spring. So the first one, Shooting Stars Above, comes out March 18th. And this series is really about the power of love to help people heal and to balance darkness and light in their lives. Ooh. So it's, and it does have an arts narrative as well. The protagonist is a novelist. She writes inspirational novels that help people feel seen and help heal people's wounds. So there's very much a story about love and a story about art in those books as well.
Shooting Stars was a previous book from way back, wasn't it?
Well, you know what happened is that I left one of my old publishers and I had quite a battle with them for a lot of reasons, but it ended well for me because I left with the rights to all of my books, okay, including re-releasing them, putting out new editions. So I rewrote the series. Okay. So I rewrote it, at this point I've spent years on it, rewriting it because I get one more shot, basically. Mm-hmm. And now I get to do it with the right publisher, the best publisher for it. So I'm excited. So I'm looking at them as like a fresh start for the series.
Oh, how exciting, exciting. Shooting Stars Above, and then the third in the trilogy, Cinematic Destinies. And then your covers are always awesome. They are just Patricia Levy covers that are just so yummy when you see them. You know, I say this every time we speak, but anytime you see your cover, you know it's your book.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I can't take the credit. My publisher and the cover designer, they do an amazing job. I do always have a lot of input, which I love, so I come up with ideas, and sometimes my ideas work out, and sometimes they don't, and somebody else's idea is better, and so we always try and go with the strongest cover, but I do like them to be inviting. I never put people on my covers. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know a lot of romance authors do, and I get that, and a lot of those books are, you know, very popular. I don't do it because I like for readers to be able to imagine the characters any way they choose to. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like when you put representations of characters on the cover, you can sort of diminish that. So we try to do other kinds of covers that, you know, sort of tap into the theme and the emotion of the book.
Absolutely. I agree with that. It's almost like you read a wonderful book and then you see the TV or the film rendition and you're feeling a little let down because that's not what was in your mind's eye.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Yep. All righty. Well, we've hopped around here. I want to make sure we didn't skip something that you wanted to highlight today. Anything that we didn't talk about that you wanted to share?
No, not at all. I think we covered it all. I appreciate it so much. And you know, if people want to look me up or look up my work, they can go to patricialevy.com. Levy is L-E-A-V-Y. So if you go to patricialevy.com, there's links to my social media, links to my books. Of course, you can also go on to Amazon or whoever your favorite retailer is, too. If you do want to read After the Red Carpet, you absolutely can read it on its own, and many readers have. But I think it's a better reading experience if you read the location shoot first. Then you sort of get the full story. So something to think about.
Well, absolutely. Now, especially that we know that the third Cinematic Destinies is coming out. If anyone hasn't read After the Red Carpet, then start from the beginning, location shoot, After the Red Carpet, and then hang in there because the third one is coming. You, Patricia, are just a highlight in my life. I am so happy we met. I love our conversations. Thank you for always sharing your books with us.
Oh my God, thank you for your kindness and all you do to support authors. I appreciate it so much, and it's always great chatting with you, Pat.